This is the podcast for April 13th, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the NRO Diversity Training Seminar, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. A very empty and sad room, Blue Gal.
Poor Rich Lowry. He's all alone after purging all the racists.
A lot of notepads.
National Review Online.
A lot of keychains with William Buckley quotes on them. Oh. Water undrunk, donuts untouched. And Rich Lowry just sitting there going, finally, finally, we fired that racist who snuck into the conservative.
Yeah,
group. How
did they get in here?
Damn. Hey, Rich, through the front door. Yeah. Yeah. Shocked. Discovery. Nothing really recently. It's an abused metaphor, but nothing recently comes close to being a perfect match to the Casablanca shock to discover gambling than that. Absolutely. And, you know, that little greasy weed of a human being is going to continue right on publishing his crap magazine.
And being well-funded for it. I mean, that's the thing. There's money. Team Evil pays.
They do. And one of the original writers of that magazine back in the 70s, 80s, now has a job at the New York Times.
Yeah. You're over. Lent is over now.
Yes, I can mention.
So you're reading David Brooks again. How did it feel to take 40 days off of that, or almost 40
days? Just delightful.
Oh, I'm so
glad. Just delightful.
That's like answering the question. Uh-huh. Do I make you a better man? How are you going to answer? Of course, it feels good.
If you have the slightest hesitation in your voice, gentlemen, you're kind of doomed. So don't you know, think about your answers.
This was my suggestion that he take Lent off.
Yeah.
From David and Brooks.
I did a pretty complete. You know, David Brooks being ubiquitous.
Yeah.
He is like Palmer Eldritch. Everybody take a drink. From Philip K. Dick, he's everywhere. His image is everywhere. His stigmata are all over us.
But it's really interesting how many clones he has out there in the media, though. Or people aspiring to be him, which makes sense, given that he's top dog. But, you can always write about David Frum or David Gregory or...
Well, he really is the Ellsworth Tui, which is an Ayn Rand reference, Ellsworth Monckton Tui. He is the guy. He is the critic at the magazine who really has a plan, and his plan is to essentially make mediocrity the law of the land. Mm-hmm. And he is. You can just, if you step back far enough, you can just see how far his shadow has spread. And, mm-hmm. and it's not like him and him alone. There's, as you said, lots of imitators, lots of duplicators. But seriously. And I had to will myself away from it because it really is something it's something I'm good at. It's one of those things I know how he thinks and I know what he's going to write about and pretty much how it's going to come out. But tracing back, one of my favorite posts in the last many months was the one I did about Nixon in 1972. You really can trace back the problems with our political system to centrism. You really can. There's nothing wrong with reasonable people agreeing and compromising.
Or listening to both sides and figuring out what is the best plan forward. But that's not what's happening.
And that has not been true for a very, very, very,
very
long
time.
And the idea that there are still people pitching a tent on that barren, awful, salted earth and making a really good living by lying to people. I'm as pissed off as anybody else at conservatives telling conservative lies. But the bigger lie, the more destructive lie, the more encompassing, totalizing lie, the one that explains all the little lies away, keeps them all safe from any scrutiny, is the big lie of centrism.
And we really should give Linky love to Mock Paper Scissors.
Yes.
This week for a post called "Why is Driftglass Smiling?" And you weren't smiling until they wrote that post. Till Ten Grain wrote that post.
My face had forgotten how to smile.
Tell everyone what Ten Grain said about what was it? Which magazine was it that reading? It's reading Driftglass.
Because it's
about centrism, and people are finally catching up to this idea that both sides do it is a lie.
It was the American Prospect.
American Prospect magazine is actually reading Driftglass. Yeah.
Holy fuck! Centrism is a giant lie. Can you believe it? Oh my God! And it you know, it is what I discovered during my little Lenten break is the in one sense the absolute futility of what I do about David Brooks, because his ideology are a behemoth. And there's too much money and too much power and too much ego and too many careers vested in keeping this lie going for little bloggers to have any effect on it at all. However, in that sense, it's exactly like the Iraq War.
Yeah, I was going to say it's exactly like the Defense Department. It is the same.
It was absolutely – you would get crushed like a bug – for opposing the Bush administration, crushed like a bug by David Brooks, I might add, yeah. For opposing the Iraq War, for suggesting that it was a terrible idea, for pointing out that George Bush was a liar and that Dick Cheney's a war criminal. That was absolutely indefensible language. People got fired over it. They lost their careers over it. They lost their record contracts over saying shit like that. And in the end, those people were right, and the people who defended Bush were wrong. And so – at some point, my hope is not that anything I say or really any liberal blogger says is going to have any effect on David Brooks at all. My hope is that what we do on this podcast and things like that give people a vocabulary to describe their world in a way that makes it make sense to them. Not that it will get any better, but it will explain to them, oh, that's why the world is fucked up. Oh, that's why these things are go on. And it's a constant puzzle-solving mystery novel that we're trying to uncover, you know, beneath all this crap, there's some truth. There's a reason why this is happening. There's a mechanism that is at play here that keeps it all going. And the second thing I do have hopes for is, you know, we and I saw the tail end of formal segregation in this country when we were kids. Mm-hmm. I was alive during a time when it was illegal to marry a member, you know, for blacks and whites to marry.
Well, I was an adult when Alabama finally removed that from its constitution. That happened in 2000. Yeah. And it wasn't enforced before that because federal law had changed with Loving versus Virginia. But they did not remove that. But first of all, it's a long story, but in Alabama you have to vote on every constitutional amendment. It didn't pass in Alabama until 2000. Mm-hmm. That blacks and whites could marry in their constitution.
And so my belief is that, you know, like a despised Old Testament prophet, in a very small way, it is the job of liberals, especially liberal bloggers, liberals who have a voice, liberals who can command the English language and make arguments, to get out in front of these issues and prepare the ground however we can. A cup of water thrown in the desert.
That's a good point. Yep.
Because
knowing that no one's going to agree with us now.
No. Oh, they're going to hate us. They're going to despise us.
We'll be right in the end, and we will have prepared the language that everyone will use down the road. Yeah.
And there's a certain fate. I mean, there. I am intimately familiar with the way the vocabulary and arguments have been prepared, in Chicago. That are currently being used by the Obama administration to talk about industrial policy, worker retraining, and manufacturing. That didn't just happen. That was a decades long or longer careful laying of some very serious groundwork.
Policy papers and policy discussions for years.
Real hard work. Heavy lift.
Glass, not to get off of this fascinating topic. I wanted to say I smell a conspiracy in the air.
You do?
And yeah, I do. I smell a conspiracy.
What have you done with my wife?
And I blame Dan Savage. I think Dan Savage is involved in a conspiracy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
let's out him now.
I think this week has proven. You know, it was only Tuesday. No. It was only 3 days ago that Rick Santorum dropped out of the race.
Rick who?
And this week has been so insane that no one even remembers. And I really do think Dan Savage is conspiring to make us all Google Santorum again.
Yeah.
This week has been insane.
Come back to Santorum.
Come back. Where are you? And let's just go through the list. I made a list, and I stopped at 10, but I made a list.
Yeah.
And the 10th one is, you know, this Santorum dropping out.
Uh-huh.
Newt Gingrich bounced another check.
Yeah, a $500 check.
In Utah. Yeah, to run against Romney in Utah.
Yeah, that's not a story. That's a Raymond Carver short story.
That's a Raymond Carver short story.
You know, somewhere Newt Gingrich is at a diner contemplating his life and staring at his shoes. And
well, but I know people like this. I know people who deal in big money and bounce checks and don't think the rules apply to them because they're rich and old and white.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so, oh, this was just a kooky thing, whereas
wrong account.
I would go to jail for that. You know, yeah. I would be sued for that.
Absolutely.
And this is Newt Gingrich's MO is, you know, like you said before, I'm a living God.
Yeah. Rules don't apply
to me. Rules don't apply to me. So.
But it's, you know, it's that's the too bad his campaign is, you know, in the Deadpool floating face down because Newt Gingrich. What's your economic policy, dude? I'm kiting checks till I get caught. You know? anyway.
Here's something that you haven't heard. Here's something I don't think you've heard about. There's a religious right group that marked the anniversary of Titanic sinking by exposing the iceberg of the radical homosexual agenda.
Yeah.
And this is a controversy now because one of the right-wingers in this video said the homosexual agenda is a moral iceberg that we need to steer clear of. And another one said this is the biggest threat to our life in our lifetime. Uh-huh. And one of those icebergs that if we don't navigate around it correctly, it will take us under. Then another conservative said, no, we've already hit the iceberg and the ship is going down.
That's right. And it's an iceberg.
The fourth or fifth one said, we're taking on water. I can't read anymore. Quick!
Quick! The steerage area is filling up with gay Irishmen dancing. Quick! Get to the lifeboat. Yeah, what are the lifeboats in this? Just you take this analogy. What are the lifeboats? I don't know. Whitetopias, perhaps?
Wow. Whitetopias. There you go. Go back to NRO and read the Whitetopia novel. And
we can save ourselves. Well, just as a brief aside, Shelley Adelson.
Yeah.
You know, Newt Gingrich's money man who stopped writing him allowance checks. I read a quote by him today saying, this is the guy who hates unions, who owns a casino, who just – his whole thing is unions are monstrously evil because they want, you know, to get paid fair wages. And he's a fucking right-wing crackpot billionaire who hates working people. And so he said that, you know, the two greatest threats to America are Islamo-fascism and unions.
Wow.
And it's just it really is – this tells you nothing about any actual threat to any actual country that we live in.
No.
But it is such a vomiting up of their – of the nightmares of their subconscious that the homosexual agenda
and Titanic
will destroy us all. Oh, my God. And watching them flip out over this is vastly entertaining. But, you know, their candidate, Rick Santorum – came awfully damn close to winning, and I, you know, and there is a quick joke I can tell you about the homosexual agenda in America and icebergs and boats.
Okay.
Would you like to hear my quick joke?
Sure.
Captain of a ship is sailing towards a bright light on the horizon, and the bright light won't move, and he won't move, and he signals to them. He said, essentially, you need to move because I'm coming your way and I'm a battleship or whatever it is. And the guy says, no, you need to move. You don't understand. The captain says, no, you don't understand. I'm a 400,000 ton destroyer and you need to get the hell out of my way. And the little light on the horizon says, I'm a lighthouse and you're headed for the shore.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fantasy that these people have about
their own power.
The country that they live in and the power they have and the destructive power is truly something that was dredged out of Chick tracks. So
And we're only going to touch on Hillary Rosen and Ann Romney for a moment because this mommy war thing is people are already tired of it.
Yeah.
Less than 24 hours later. But I did want to say that Hillary Rosen tweeted this morning that she's decided not to appear on Meet the Press on Sunday. She's going to stay home with her children. And you know, this let it die the death it needs to die, and let's get back to the issue of car elevators versus medical care for premature infants and how we're going to get rid of that.
Oh, honey, it's never going to die. It's never going to die. These people like snapping turtles.
I know.
Saul Alinsky will never die. Acorn will never die. It becomes part of the mythos.
Well, yeah. And like you say, the homosexual agenda, the radical homosexual agenda.
Yeah.
We'll never die.
That we'd like to get married like everybody else. That's the summary of the entire homosexual agenda. We'd like to not be shit on by this culture. We'd like to not be beaten to death, if at all possible. And could we get married and have kids and be boring suburban people like everybody else? Yep. That's it. Yeah. That's the entire gay agenda. And so, come on, iceberg. I'm rooting for the iceberg.
Number 7, Mitt Romney will get back to you on equal pay for equal work.
Yeah. It was that long pause when his spokesperson had no idea what to say to that or maybe what the hell he was even talking about.
Yeah.
That was Sam Stein, I think, asked that question. And it was perfect. You know?
And just breaking news about this guy in Virginia, the Speaker of the House in Virginia, who was asked on camera by Anna Scholl, the executive director of Progress Virginia. He's also one of the chairmen of ALEC and on the board of ALEC, former chairman of ALEC, that organization that drafts all the anti-gay, anti-women, anti-science
crap
legislation. Yeah.
Yeah, that has so far flown very, very low under the radar.
Yeah, until this week when you know, even McDonald's said they have to leave. And so now right-wingers are saying, let's boycott McDonald's. Oh, good luck with that.
Yeah.
So this guy, William Howell, not William Howell III, just William Howell, was asked by Anna Scholl about the fact that the Virginia House used actual taxpayer money to send legislators to ALEC conferences. And in the past 10 years has spent $232,000 sending legislators on taxpayer dime to ALEC conferences.
To learn how to be assholes.
And his response was, well, actually that's full of half untruths and half-truths. And we sent them to bipartisan things too. A lot of this was bipartisan. And she said, how does that change the fact that you use taxpayer money to send legislators to this outside organization's conferences? How does that change my question? And his response was quite telling, if you ask me.
Yeah.
He said, I guess I'm not speaking in little enough words for you to understand. And as I said to one of my friends on email, I guess we're winning that war on caterpillars.
Yeah. Well, this is obviously where Rince Priebus went to charm school.
Yeah. You know? That's right.
Because, I mean, and you really, the subtext of that answer is, fuck you, you little white bitch. I don't have to answer your question. Yeah. Don't you know I'm white and I'm a man?
Well, and it points out something that you said on a couple of podcasts ago, that these conservative older white men don't mind blacks and women as long as they stay in their place.
Exactly.
You know. But once they ask question my authority, then they are feminazis and bitches and don't, you know, uppity and don't know their place and they need to be smacked down.
And this is – remember, folks, this is nothing new. Rush Limbaugh, for example, has been calling women feminazis for 20 years.
Yeah.
And his loyal fan base have been cheering and orking along and clapping like the train seals that they are for 25 years. So – This is simply, these people have been trained not to say shit on camera, but the sense of really, this is what is so telling, is that sense of righteous indignation, that how dare you, you little bitch, ask me a question. Don't you know who I am? I'm a white man. For God's, I rule this world. Where the hell, and you know what? You can always tell when they've watched an episode of Mad Men, because they get especially cranky. That it's not the 60s anymore, and they can't boss people around and get drunk over lunch and fuck anybody they want. Those good old days are gone forever, and they really feel like somebody stole from them. And so when some uppity young lady or some out-of-place Negro or some liberal pushes that button, they just go right off the rails. And they have been given permission to get more and more loud about this.
Yep.
Because the GOP, which is indistinguishable now from the conservative movement, which is indistinguishable from hate radio and Fox News, has made it okay to say the crazy inside voice shit outside.
Yeah.
And so they get less and less guarded about the crazy stuff that's always been there. And again, liberals standing on the sidelines say, "We told you so."
Well, speaking of that, Alan West.
Yes.
He found some communists, but he doesn't want to name them. And are they in his? Where are they? Are they in his pants? No, they're not.
I have
representative.
Beds in my pants. Yeah. Well, you know,
he said out loud what the crazy shit that's going on in his head, and apparently. That's okay.
Well, I will direct everyone where I'll put the link up to that stuff I had I transcribed from Rod Serling's biography, mm-hmm. where he wrote in the 60s about the conservative movement, the Republican Party being opening its arms and welcoming neo-Nazis,
yeah,
Nazis,
and look who's sitting in your parlor. Yes.
And Burchards.
Yeah. You
know, this is nothing new. It's just he's learned how to blow that, you know, that dog whistle, as I forget who said it, probably James Walcott. It's blow it like an air raid siren.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're talking about and not just commies, but specific numbers of communists.
Oh, yeah. Which is right out of – what did you say? It was right out of –
Manchurian Candidate. It's absolutely.
Pick a number. Yeah.
Where Angela Lansbury asked her husband, you know, what's the problem? He said, well, I need an easily rememberable number. And he's looking at the Heinz ketchup bottle. And the next shot is him in the Senate going, there are exactly 57 communists in the Defense Department.
Yeah.
And it's not – and the point being that even in the 60s, that behavior was so ludicrous and so obvious and so demagogic that it could be part of a popular entertainment. Everybody would get the joke. Alan West really was elected by a bunch of really stupid people in the great state of Florida. And he really is this fucking evil and crazy. And this and the point being not that he said some crazy shit, which he did, but that you have to measure the distance between this stuff and stuff Republicans say every day with a micrometer now.
And it would be one thing if it was a crazy right-wing blogger. If this was some crazy right-wing blogger saying, we have to do a communist purge of Congress, and people could laugh and point at it and go, ha-ha, this is an elected official of the party.
Who is saying stuff that is
and Ritz
no
Priebus isn't pulling him into a hotel lobby and saying, shut up.
Mm-hmm. No.
You know,
and
neither is the Speaker of the House pulling him into a corridor and telling him, get off the crazy train because you're making us look like we're crazy.
And speaking of heroes who have stood up to extremism, the next item on our list is
Rich Lowry. Yeah, who's standing up to the racists in his midst. Yeah.
Yes. I know for a fact, Blue Gal, there are exactly 187 trillion racists at the NRO. And I can actually point
all.
To two of them.
Yes.
I can point to two of them who Lowry finally had to walk out the door after a very, very long history of writing racist, white supremacist crap.
Well, and we never let that stuff on our site, even though he wrote it elsewhere.
Yeah.
And but that's okay.
Dude,
and
you employed him. You know, this is 1 week. Blue Gals.
Yeah, I know. Two in one week is something.
This is the wash. No, this list of stuff just melting down and going nuts and flying off into batshit land, this whole list is from 1 week of American
history. This is all 1 week. And we're only on number, you know, seven. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rick Warren got into a pissing battle with federal food programs.
Yeah.
Over who really feeds the poor and hungry and who should. And I just, several people have talked with me about this week and just shook their heads and saying, why does it have to be a competition? Why can't it be an exhibition?
Uh-huh.
Let's all feed the hungry. Let's everyone feed. There's a never-ending pit of needy people.
Yes.
And Jesus said, the poor you always have with you. That was an accusation. Mm-hmm. That was a condemnation, not just a statement of fact.
Mm-hmm.
But and enough said. I'm done with Rick Warren, but the idea that he would get into an argument and say government shouldn't be doing this churches should be doing this only, and let's exclude other people who are trying to help the hungry and poor.
Well, and as a matter of just historical reference, let us recall that once upon a time, it was the church's responsibility to feed the poor and the hungry.
Yeah.
Then we had this thing called the Great Depression.
Yeah.
And after the Great Depression, when people started when the War Department was recruiting people into the military, they noticed that a staggeringly high number of their young recruits had real poor nutrition, suffered from rickets, suffered from all kinds of diseases related to starvation.
Nutrition and starvation, yeah.
And so the school lunch program, the most ubiquitous feed everybody program, feed children especially program in American history, and mightily successful, I might add, is number one, an agricultural support program, first and foremost. It props farmers up. Yep. And number two, it was started by the Defense Department because churches had failed spectacularly.
And we need a pool of military recruits.
Yes.
Which is horrible to think about.
Yeah.
But that's why we're feeding our young people so that they can be ripe for the military.
But that's what was going on.
Yeah.
Like supply-side economics, we tried it, Rick Warren. It failed.
Yeah.
And the establishment, the actual War Department, not a bunch of bleeding heart liberals, stepped in and said, oh, no, we can't permit this shit to go on.
Right. We need our military to not have rickets when we bring them up for service.
Yes. And that's why we have lunch programs.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
And just getting back to how this is actual legislators, not just a crazy Rick Warren who's not been elected to anything.
Come on. He's a member of the elect. But,
well, all right. Yeah. Okay,
see?
That was good.
See what I did there?
You went there? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Scott Walker. What is Scott Walker doing repealing Lilly Ledbetter?
He is making himself the Koch brothers employee of the month. That's what he's doing.
And he probably fully expects to lose his job as governor, but he'll be employed by the Koch brothers till the end of time. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a saboteur. He's an elected saboteur of the American dream. Yeah. He's a sapper of the American dream. And there is a list, and you can recite it from memory. Get rid of Medicare, get rid of Medicaid, get rid of regulations, Social Security, unions, any sort of intervention in the workplace that is an act on behalf of the worker. Minimum wage. I would imagine that if he ever got away with this, he'd be pulling the minimum wage law off the books. These are all things that the conservative movement in this country have been desperate to enact for the last 70 years. And he is going down the list doing what his overlords have paid him to do, have put him in office to do. He's a very loyal little Nazi. And he is going to go through until the day they drag him out of office, putting through the legislation that makes his bosses happy. And the point being that he didn't beam in from outer space. The good people of Wisconsin elected him to office. And if I may cite Driftglass from a few minutes ago, liberals told you so.
Yeah.
We told you this is going to happen every time you put these fuckers in office. Why do people act surprised when they put these goons in office? They act like goons. That's the part that gets me. The shock that suddenly, oh my God, yeah, these people are awful. I've totally forgot about that. Anyway, number two.
Well, and just to go back to this, that this is actually happening in a way that affects real people. This isn't just, a bunch of crazy right-wing bloggers out there. This is actually changing laws that affect women's right to get paid for equal pay for equal work. That's
at the other end of the spectrum, this is not a dorm room conversation among academic conservative theorists who have no fucking clue how conservatism apparently works in the real world in America, in this country, and has for the last 30 years. This is not an academic discussion. This affects millions of real people every goddamn day.
Yep. And the last news item, which everyone's talked about this week, is Zimmerman. And I wanted to just point out two things. One is the freak out over the second degree murder charge. This is overcharging him, and we're overcharging him so that they can get a plea bargain. And maybe that's the case, and maybe it isn't, but I just want to point out that this obvious liberal prosecutor is a Rick Scott appointee.
Yeah.
And apparently she's had very good success with the cases that she chooses to prosecute, and that's already a filter. Let's be clear about that.
Uh-huh.
She picks cases she can win, and she's the prosecutor here. So she's going to choose to press charges where she can successfully prosecute. But apparently with these stand your ground laws, the cases where she has chosen to prosecute, she's got something like an 86% success rate at prosecuting people for manslaughter or second-degree murder.
Under what is a terrible, terrible law.
Yeah, and as I say, I want to reiterate, she chooses the cases she's going to prosecute. So her success rate is based on her choosing cases she's going to win.
Yeah.
But this idea that, you know, this is some sort of liberal conspiracy against white people.
Yeah.
she's a Rick Scott appointee, and she's a prosecutor. She's not exactly a bleeding heart. So.
Oh, and speaking of bleeding hearts and George Zimmerman in this whole case, we got an extensive email from a member of law enforcement.
Yes, we did. That's right.
That corrected us on some of the things we have said, factually incorrect, and I think in the way I said things, it came out wrong. And I don't have it in front of me. I can't read the whole thing. But let me just say, A, George Zimmerman was not released with gun in hand.
Yeah,
I believe
that's true.
B,
that's right.
He was in fact arrested.
He was in fact brought in, and there were video of that. But that's kind of the point too, is that his nose wasn't broken. You know, there were there's evidence, lots of evidence that there's lots of misinformation on both sides.
And three, you know, I don't blame the cops for this decision.
Hmm.
I tend to agree with the person who said this. I'm compressing a very long email into a very short comment. But to say that, A, I heard you. You were right. I was wrong. I was factually incorrect on a couple of points. But B, I still maintain, and I think this person would agree with me, that while the beat cop probably wasn't the person to beat up on making a decision about this, because he did come into the station, somewhere in the hierarchy of law enforcement, somebody with power chose to let him go.
Yep.
That was a decision made by somebody somewhere, and that was a horribly bad, wrong, awful, unjust decision.
And I think our correspondent was not denying that.
And believe me, I have worked in large hierarchies of organizations that are generically hated by the public, but the specific people I worked with, A, did a great job, and B, were always sort of sided with the public. Yeah, they're right. The people above us are assholes. And C, always felt really unfairly beat up on because they couldn't do anything about what the people up in the higher offices were doing. So I get it.
Yeah.
But I just want to make sure that correction's on the record and that, no, I'm not going to flame anybody who emails us and tells me I'm wrong. I'm wrong a lot.
Right. No.
If you correct
us, we're going to – and you have the facts. You have the facts. That's it.
Yeah.
I also wanted to point out I waded over to redstate.com today.
Honey. Oh,
honey. And there are two things I wanted to point out there. One is there's an ad, and they're not fully responsible for the ads that appear on their website. I'm not holding them accountable for that. But there is an Alan West ad. Being attacked by the liberal media. Alan West is being attacked by the liberal media. Donate $10 and get an Alan West for Congress bumper sticker.
Yeah.
But they are responsible for the posts on their blog.
Yes, they are.
And there is nothing in the first two or three pages about Zimmerman. It is all war on moms, war on moms, war on moms, war on moms, on and on and on.
Oh yeah, there's a
yep.
If you go, I'd be willing to bet a shiny new dime, even a shiny new quarter, that if you went over to any of the Breitbart Topia sites,
not going there,
or if you went over to one of the notorious conservative Chicago-based Breitbart offshoot sites,
I don't mean to say that I'm not. I don't have a closed mind, and I'm happy to go to any right-wing blogs and look at what they're doing, but. I've just gotten out of red. I've just closed the tab on Red State, so I'm going to give myself 10 minutes.
No, I'm not saying you should do that. Oh, honey, please don't. You're going to have to shower 3 times anyway. I mean, in the backyard, we'll have to go outside with the hazmat and the chemical hose and just clean you off. I'm sorry, but that's just the rule. That's just a law. That's just science, honey. But if I'm willing to wager, if you went over there right now, you would find the news we are talking about would would nowhere exist out there. It would be war on women, war on women, war, which
war
is why
moms,
they won't forget
moms.
It.
Yeah.
It'll
yeah.
be, it will be union bashing. Somebody somewhere said something mean about somebody. The upcoming liberal attempt to rig the elections through whatever acorn offshoot still exists out there in the world. And a complete, it's a parallel paranoid Bircher universe.
Yep.
That is extremely well funded. I mean, it really, how much, you said that you had done a little bit of research, maybe it's unfair to ask you this, about what the late Andrew Breitbart paid James O'Keefe for being
a, he had
for
a contract. The contract was for $120,000. I don't think they made that full amount.
Uh-huh.
But the young lady in the Acorn videos made over $30,000 paid by Breitbart.
Yep.
For what? For her participation in that.
For.
And $30,000. I just.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here asking for $5 donations, and believe me, we are grateful to everyone who donates. But when I see Team Evil paying a woman $32,000 for.
To be a junior assistant rat fucker.
Yeah.
To show up in a video and then parade around like you're a prostitute later.
Later, and make it look like you, yeah, and fake it to destroy, yeah, an organization that helps black people vote.
And that's, you know, this is, I know I did a terrible thing when I subverted the beautiful verses of the Corinthians, but, you know, money is patient.
Yeah.
Money bears all things. The trick, this is not, it's not a magic trick why Rick Scott succeeds. Why the rat fucking videos continue, why these horrible sites continue, why Rich Lowry still has a job, the answer is very, very simple.
Yep.
It's money.
Funded. Yep.
They are very, very well funded by people who deeply believe that liberals are out to destroy America, and those people are either small contributors or they are billionaire crackpots. And the left simply cannot match the sheer volume of dough that the right is willing to pour into its propaganda machine, which is why this shit never dies down. Because it not only props up the war on mommies crap, but it funds the centrists who are willing to say, well, maybe there is something that, but, you know, liberals as well. But, you know, both sides really are deeply conflicted over the issue of women.
No.
So it that dollar, the centrist dollar, that's a really,
that's a really,
really
good dollar. I want to get to the meat now.
Yes.
I mean, I want to get to the meat of our podcast, because you had some fascinating things to say in our conversation that we have all week. We are always podcasting in this house. It's just that an hour on Friday is is recorded.
Uh-huh.
But you were talking about Saul Alinsky.
Yeah.
And
well,
who no one had heard of, even on the left, had ever really discussed outside of the University of Chicago.
No.
Before it was made into this Newt Gingrich, okay. I'm going to use a name that's slightly communist and definitely Jewish,
yes,
to make Obama look like a radical.
Yes.
And talk about this some more, because you had some really interesting ideas about this.
Well, it's really kind of simple. And I'm not saying this has never happened in the media before. People have tried to do this, but it fails. It keeps hitting this wall. And that's Saul Alinsky was almost non-existent, almost unknown on the left. Not because he didn't have – not because he was part of a secret cabal, but because he was – you know, he wrote a couple of good books. He was a community organizer.
Well, he was an academic. And, you know, there's going to be a certain ghetto for that kind of literary – politics.
And people discuss his methods.
Yeah.
Newt Gingrich admired his methods. Republicans have admired – because his methods were, how do you organize people who don't have power in a way that helps them exercise power?
Yep.
You know, it's
that's
basic.
That's Tea Party. That's pure
– absolutely.
Populist. How do you get people in the streets to do what you want them to do, to work on your message? Yeah.
It's called democracy. Suck it up. But – Saul Alinsky suddenly became the absolute mastermind, along with Jeremiah Wright, of every dark liberal or every dark conservative paranoid fantasy about what liberals were really up to in this country. He became the sort of the overarching boogeyman because he's Jewish and kind of red and kind of left and had a funny New York-y sounding name. And he's a perfect complement to Obama, who's black, you know, and has this Muslim name and is from a big city. So the Jewish commie conspiracy, yep. And of course their African-American dupes who are also urban. It was the perfect little it was two halves of a critical mass coming together with a little bit of Jeremiah Wright sprinkled on top for fun. But the point being that Saul Alinsky's work and life are laid open for abuse and misuse and misquoting and horror and looking with alarm by the right all the time. Everybody now knows who Saul Alinsky is. All right, that's politics. That's fair game. But there are actual writers and theoreticians on the right who really do directly influence the actions of people in Congress, the actions of people who take us to war. One of the theoreticians, one of the writers on the right is Ayn Rand.
Mm-hmm. Who people actually read on the right and follow.
I mean, and who Paul Ryan actually makes his staff read, forces them to read. Here, you are now going to read The Fountainhead, or here, you are now going to read Atlas Shrugged. Sit down and read it. That's fine. I mean, as an adolescent boy, before I got hair in all those interesting places, I found the ideas fascinating because they were big, abstract ideas where you have two-dimensional characters.
Yeah, and it's black and white world, which a teenager can understand, sure.
Yeah. And there's a quote about, you know, there's two great novels about that influence teenage boys. One is Lord of the Rings and one is Atlas Shrugged. One is full of fantastic fictional characters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
The one is by J.R.R. Tolkien.
The other one has orcs, you know?
Yeah,
so as I've said many times before, Ayn Rand is bad science fiction.
Yeah.
Real bad science fiction. It's straw men fighting each other over tax cuts. It's just a horribly turgid, gigantic mess. But it's full of these long speeches that tell people who are at the arrested age of 14 and male, you know, how the world should be. These awesome women should love you because you're an awesome capitalist. And people shouldn't be able to take your money away and spend it on those useless moochers out there in the world. You should be able to keep every goddamn dime you make. And I'm gonna stop the world. I'm gonna find a way to stop the engine of the world and make people respect me for being the awesome creative genius that I am. This is very appealing. Here's the problem. And the other one is Leo Strauss. Leo Strauss, who is the father, godfather of neoconservatism, who's one of his acolytes is Bill Kristol, who was Dan Quayle's guy.
And Sarah Palin's guy.
Sarah Palin out of the wilderness.
Who
influences policy, who is one of the chief architects of the Project for a New American Century, who got us into the Iraq War, who celebrates it, and who still maintains that we can invade every country on Earth simultaneously and win if we only have the will to do it.
Yeah.
All right. So Leo Strauss's actual work has actual real world consequences, but nobody talks about him. He exists. He was a person. He wrote. He has a record, and nobody talks about him, even though he influenced the Bush White House arguably more than any other single individual when it comes to making war and the reason why you invent phony enemies to keep the population in line. Ayn Rand's economic theories directly influenced Rand Paul. Fuck, he's nicknamed after her. Directly influenced Ron Paul and Mr. Ryan, the zombie-eyed granny starver, as Charles Pierce calls him, is in love with her. So my question is, why aren't people asking, okay, if Saul Alinsky's fair game, why aren't we talking about the fact that Ayn Rand has really, really psychotically radical ideas about religion, really, which you may or may not agree with, but I guarantee you the fact that Ayn Rand thinks you should be able to have an abortion until the ninth month,
yep.
The fact that she
hated the idea of Jesus, let alone Christianity. Oh, yeah. I mean,
loathe the idea. If you're a person of faith, you are either deluded or mentally ill. That people of faith, this is not a small part of her ideology. This is half of her ideology. And every time she mentions the socialist communist moochers, she mentions in the same breath and the spiritual ones, the ghost ones, the ones who like one has a head but no body, one has a body but no head. People of faith are exactly as bad in her ideology as communists.
Yeah.
They are horrible because they try to inflict on you this horrible idea of altruism and make you live for other people. And that is as bad as Stalinist was ever. Period. Now, that's what she believes. And she said it on the Mike Wallace show. She said it in many interviews. She said it in print. It's in every fucking book she ever wrote. People who are of faith are as dangerous
as communists,
yep, and socialists and moochers and liberals are. And they can't be trusted because they're irrational and they believe these horrible, horrible things. So why isn't anybody asking Paul Ryan about that? Why aren't people asking Mitt Romney about that? Why aren't people – some people have. People have approached Paul Ryan in the hallway and said, by the way, don't you think –
Yeah, and tried to give him a Bible, you know, and say, you know, this is Christianity, not Ayn Rand. Why are you doing that? And he won't take it.
We'll talk about it. And the thing is, this doesn't reveal anything new that probably listeners to this podcast didn't know about Saul Alinsky or Ayn Rand or Leo Strauss. But it reveals that there is an absolute force field around certain sensitive conservative topics that the mainstream media maintains. We are not going to fucking talk about Ayn Rand on Meet the Press, period, end of story.
Yep.
Or if we do, we'll ask one question and the person will say, well, you know, she said some controversial things about Christianity, but really her economic policies and blah, blah, blah. And I find my Christian faith and her economic – okay, that's the answer. And that's fine. But then where's the follow-up question?
Yeah,
where's the question that Drift Class would say, which is, but that's bullshit. Ayn Rand, Ayn Rand said –
Wait,
like,
first of all, you're going to get kicked off the air on Meet the Press just for saying that.
That's fine. But I'll go out in a blaze of glory, honey.
Yeah.
But the follow-up question to the inevitable lie that people like Ryan will mouth to get over the fact that there is absolutely no way to reconcile Randite objectivism with Christianity, period. Unless you invent a completely new kind of Christianity called the prosperity doctrine,
where
God wants everybody to be rich, which is sort of what they're doing.
And God blesses rich people and punishes – poor people are simply being punished by God. That's why they're poor. Yep.
And if these issues – if Paul Ryan didn't make people on his staff read this shit and quote it and use it as his foundational text, if people like – Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly didn't proclaim themselves to be big fans of her work, if she weren't celebrated by the right openly as the fountainhead, ha ha ha, pun intended, of so much of what they believe, then I wouldn't care about some writer who was a complete hypocrite towards the end of her life and lived off the government dime, was perfectly happy to take Medicare and Social Security and all those other mooching government programs. But she is so central to everything they believe in, and fully half or more than half of what she believes is so horrifying and would horrify
them. She misses Jesus in their book, and the other half of that coin is Ayn Rand. It's not shaded in any way. Yeah.
And, you know, and her number two acolyte was Alan Greenspan.
Yeah.
This is not someone who had an inconsiderable influence on our
policy.
Her crazy ass, fuck you, I've got mine, dog eat dog, survival of the fittest ideology. Her ability to wrap an ideology around sociopathology and make it into a political system is what Republicans celebrate about her. They draw strength from her ideas.
And what you said in the podcast notes, I think, is really important. Locating the generator of the force field that is around certain conservative topics, and it's so that there can be a balance, so that there can be a horse race, so that there can be challenging ideas to truth. It's become truth and lies. That's a controversy. Truth versus lies, that's a controversy.
That's just a thing. You know, that's just a matter of opinion. Locating the generator of that force field, because it's there. You can absolutely see it. There's some topics that our political media won't touch with a fucking barge pole.
And Chuck Never. Todd is one of the maintainers of that force field, of the generator. I mean, I read his article today on, you know, he does these first reads and, you yeah. know, the early morning post. And it is absolutely great news for Mitt Romney. And yeah. and how, you know, there are these imaginary drummed up controversies like the mommy wars, which I agree. Yeah, that's yeah. true. And also Etch-a-Sketch. Like, that's the other side of it. And Etch-a-Sketch no. is what his campaign, one of his campaign managers, what one of Romney's campaign managers said they were going to do to campaign for the general election. We're going to shake the Etch-a-Sketch and erase what we've said all along. That's not a manufactured controversy, Chuck.
No. And it also fits, it also you know, it is Gerald Ford tripping for the fourth time.
Yes,
it
yes.
so perfectly fits what we all
Everyone
know.
Everyone thinks about Mitt Romney, anyway. Including on the right.
But he needed
on the right.
a
yeah.
fake liberal.
Yep, something that would liberal, that would make liberals exactly, and it just
to counterpose to say, well, see both sides. Everybody's yeah. doing it, and the reason is, I believe, the reason I is very simple. I have no proof of this other than the evidence of my own senses and my brain. But it certainly appears to me that the purpose of NBC, for example, and Meet the Press, is not to inform the public, but to move product for GE.
Move product for GE, and in order to do that, you have to have ratings. In order to have ratings, there has to be a horse race. And if one side is so far behind, I mean, we're going to – I predict that by August, we won't be looking at polls anymore.
Well,
the number of polls out there will be lower than low.
I think it'll be close, and I think they'll continue to prop up whoever the right has, which will be Mitt Romney. Yeah. But I think more than continue to protract a non-existent horse race, if Chuck Todd or Mark Halperin were ever forced at the point of a truth serum gun, let's say, mm-hmm. to speak the truth of what they know to be reality into a microphone on NBC, number one, on that day they would be fired.
Yeah.
Not spending 30 days in the penalty box
no,
like
fired.
Mark
yeah.
Halperin had to do when he called the president a dick, but actually being fired because you said something true on television that alienated a big chunk of your audience. speaking of using little words because you're not very bright, if anybody ever got in front of the Meet the Press audience and said the problem with this country, other than Rachel Maddow, who they reluctantly have on every blue moon when she writes a book, were to talk about a real specific topic. And I think I would be – she gets very close to saying things that are very uncomfortably true, and she always gets shut down. I always applaud her for doing it. But if you got someone out there in front of the audience who said the real problem with this country is the conservatives are crazy and they're evil and they're run by awful, awful people and they fuck this country up horribly badly and that's the problem. And until we get rid of them, we will continue to have these vexing problems. And number two, everybody around this table knows it. But you can't say it because suddenly a third of your audience or more who consider themselves Republicans or conservatives would be deeply insulted and they'd walk away. You'd lose your audience, you'd lose your ratings, and CNN would pick them up. Or ABC will hire Newt Gingrich to suck those people over to them. Because it's entertainment. It's not news. It's not reality. It's not fact. It's not truth. The problem is it's where people go to make themselves feel as
like
though
they're informed.
Told the truth,
yeah.
As
yeah.
if they were informed.
Yeah.
And so they come marching out of this machine all reciting the same centrist bullshit. It's the left and it's the right. Both sides do it. Both sides are wrong. And they get very confused when they come across dirty liberals like me who hold up in their face the fact that that's not true.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they say, well, you know, David Gregory makes $1 jillion a year and you're an angry blogger. I believe him, not you.
Yeah, right.
So,
right.
And again, but again, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when this bubble collapses as they all do, at least we will be able to say from our refrigerator box under the
under Lower Wacker Drive,
under the railroad trestle, to say, "We told you so. We warned you. You wouldn't fucking listen. But Todd was lying to you. David Gregory's a douche."
On that note, we want to thank you for listening. You can listen to our podcast for free at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, at our Facebook page, and by the way, Driftglass. Happy episode 123.
Yes, 123rd episode.
We have. At our Facebook page, 625 fans.
Wow.
Thank you, guys. That is awesome. And that's where we're putting our links up to discussions of articles that we've discussed today are all up at our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. I'm Frances Langum, L-A-N-G-U-M, on Facebook. Feel free to friend me. I'll friend you back. We're on iTunes and through our fabulous Professional Left app available at the iTunes store. We're on the amazing Stitcher Radio, and we're on Netroots Radio from 6 to 7 Pacific, 9 to 10 Eastern at netrootsradio.blogspot.com. You can make a contribution to our podcast, and thank you to those of you who have done so. We got a wonderful email from a listener named William this week, and he said, I enjoyed you guys' podcast immensely, as usual. Thank you both. I am sure a number of people have written to express the following sentiment, but I will chime in with my two cents. You never need to apologize, Blue Gal, for showing your empathy during the podcast. Please don't apologize. Your heart is part of the reason I enjoy your podcast so much. He is referring to the fact that I cried last week. And a lot of you wrote to me, and I appreciate all of your emails. I, too, become very angry at the politicians who make me want to go postal on them, but I really don't want to feel that way. I remember, this is William writing, I remember the Beatitudes, especially blessed are they that are hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled, and blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. I think of you when I read that. Oh, my gosh. Don't make me cry again, William. I think of you when I read that and thank you for your passion and articulation. Bless you both. William. Thank you, William. And we deeply appreciate your kind words and your contributions. We are not waiting for you to win mega millions jackpots to meet all of our needs. And we are happy to wait until you get your tax refund to send your $5 in. We got a contribution by check in our P.O. box this week. And in the memo of the check, it said, got my tax refund. So that cracked us up, and we appreciate it so much. We are asking for a $5 contribution if you enjoy this show.
Or
to
more.
Support our work. Or more.
Please feel free to up that ante.
Yeah. And those of you that can afford it, we really appreciate your support of our work here.
We do.
Thank you.
Very much. Mm-hmm.
And we have a P.O. box where you can mail a contribution, or you can do it via PayPal at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. And our P.O. box is P.O. box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. That address is also at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. Every week, we post at our Facebook page and our blog an internet kitty. Feel free to email us an internet kitty, a picture of your kitty, and we will be happy to put them on the list. This week's internet kitty is named Black. Black is the new internet kitty and is already up at our Facebook page and website. Thank you for sending the picture of Black to our email address.
She goes with everything. So.
Yeah, she goes with everything. Our email address is proleftpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to write us. Be aware that if you write us at the P.O. box or at that email address, we reserve the right to read your email on the air unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, the internet kitties are angling for a place on Alan West's commie enemies list.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2012. Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.